Okay, you guys, welcome back to the podcast, season 3, episode 1.
We're back.
We are back. My name is Ian Fraser.
I'm Matt Boyce.
And we are going to take a dive in season 3 into the people who we believe are becoming the disruptors in our industry, the people who are really bringing disruptive technology, information to shake up what we thought was the norm, the preconceived norms in golf.
Absolutely. The people that we think will probably shape the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely.
And important to say, not just equipment. I think we intend to do this with players and coaches. Yep. And our guest today is a prime example. Yes, it's equipment, but it's more than that. It's very much analytics. I would say just player development based.
And the kind of idea for this, how, what we were going to name this season, was really based on knowing that we had CEO and co-founder of Arcos Golf, Sal Sai, joining us today. And
awesome.
Our sort of feelings towards the impact that Arcos is going to make in the golf industry as a disruptive technology. And we mean that in a significantly positive sense.
Yes, very, very much so, a positive sense. And I think when we first got, I'll say introduced to Arcos, but when we first started kind of diving into it a bit, to me, it took you very little time to say that you thought this was going to be a game changer.
Yeah,
I remember
you
saying that very early on, which I found quite interesting, and it definitely helped me kind of pay attention to it a little bit even closer. And I think with what they've added in the last really 12 months, it's just become even more so a game changer. Like, it's just, I can see the roadmap to it where this is going to be just a key part of golf for the average player that doesn't have ShotLink on the course. Like, you know, Tiger and Dustin and these guys, they can go to PGAtour.com afterwards and see every single shot, stat, everything imaginable right afterwards because they're literally being tracked.
Exactly.
But the average player hasn't had that in a realistic fashion. I do think this is a realistic way to get tour stats.
And really, I'm starting to separate golfers. And you've got golfers who are informed. Mm. You've got golfers who are uninformed.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in that uninformed group.
No.
Not with the amount of technology that's available. I think of Arcos in a position right now the same way as I thought of TrackMan back in 2006 when I first saw TrackMan. I knew there was something in this that not everybody would have access to, and it would make a significant difference to the people who had access to it. The difference being Arcos is available for everyone. It's just the adoption rate is always a little slow while people go, is this something I should get involved in or not?
Very true, and I think it's a great comparison in that Arcos is as significant as TrackMan, but it's considerably more accessible. So obviously, you're not likely to be buying a TrackMan unless you're a very small percentage of the community, and that's fine. And then there's another part of the community that may not even be able to access a TrackMan, other than maybe occasionally. But you're right, once you've bought Arcos, you know, the sensors one time, it's a fairly reasonable investment in money and relatively quite cheap that's going to last you years. And also it's going to provide you with as much value on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, let's just dive in here. Cause we, you know, we could talk about this further and get into, but we want to save a lot of our thoughts on Arcos and the impact that we think it'll have in your lives and golfers all over the world. But we want to talk to Sal about that and get his thoughts.
There'll be no better person to talk to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Sal, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to see you, buddy. How are things?
Things are busy. I mean, what's interesting is around this time, we start seeing a slowdown of golf in the Northeast and certainly north parts of America and the world. And right now, we're not seeing any slowdown at all, which is like shocking, but amazing for golf.
Yeah, and just normally that for most people is a perception, right? You know, we feel like golf's slowing down. We're talking to the guy that has the real live numbers.
Yeah,
you know if it is or if it isn't. That ticker is ever moving with the data collection. You literally are one of the very few people in the world that knows that not golf is not slowing down right now.
Such a good point.
True.
The rounds,
I'm not
rounds
missing
played anything. Yeah, you're not missing anything. That's hilarious.
Well,
and it's a real time view too, which is fascinating. And
absolutely,
it's really, really interesting. But you know what's interesting is also, I mean, when people say like, you know, golf's good in this time, it's The same thing was written about 100 years ago when you read like Dr. Alistair McKenzie's book. He was a medical man, and he was talking about golf is good for like the health of the individual and mental health, physical health, and all that stuff, which is what, I mean, COVID has kind of, I would say, brought to the fore, where if we're stuck inside, we want to get out there, there's a big mental component to it as well as a physical component to golf, which, I mean, it's interesting, like the same things have been said over and over the years, like some things never change and some things are always true.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of a recurring event, I guess, to where people are waking up to how good golf is in terms of like a even just like a basic outdoor, somewhat mentally therapeutic activity you can do with your friends. Mm-hmm. You can be safe doing it in this current
situation.
And you
can do it your entire life.
Yeah. And you can do your whole life.
And you can keep getting better. I would say like golf's one of the few sports where you can keep getting better. For like, I played college tennis, and I knew like once you're in, like in your late 20s, early 30s, you'll kind of hit your peak unless you're Roger Federer. You kind of hit your peak with golf. Yeah, it's amazing.
Very, very cool.
That's a very, very good point.
Well, Sal, it's a pleasure to have you on, and thanks so much for joining us. You know, we just mentioned in our intro there that this season for us is known as the Disruptors series. And that was really based on the fact that we knew that you were going to be guest number one of season three. And the way that we feel about Arcos Golf and the impact that it is going to have, it is having, but it is going to have in the future. So maybe you can just, you know, start with a little origin story, yours and obviously Arcos and how we got to where we are today.
Well, first off, thank you. That's high praise. I hope I can live up to that. So origin story. Well, I had two other co-founders. We started when I was going to business school at Yale. And my background personally is data architecture. So I was a data architect before going to business school. I love golf. Even though I played college tennis, I would say golf was always my first love. And I ended up going to Yale because of the golf course. It was a C.B. McDonald designed, Seth Rainer designed course. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to take 2 years off like working, I better be near an awesome golf course. And dare I say, I might have spent more time on the golf course than in class at business school. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be a close toss up. But for me, it basically meshed a few passions: technology, data, golf. I mean, I can't imagine not a day feels like I'm working, and I can't imagine. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world having this job and bringing on-course data to golf. And in terms of like, I would say, our evolution and how Arcos got to where it is, it really is a tribute to the engineering team. In the end, what we're trying to do is capture what's happening on the golf course. Like we saw. There's technologies that are capturing what's happening in the hitting bay. There's technologies that might be, I mean, there's like gaming technologies and all that stuff. There's simulators, there's launch monitors, but nobody's actually really at scale, or at least till we've come about, nobody was really tracking what golfers are doing on the golf course. And in the end, everything we do, whether it's lessons we take, the equipment that we buy, the fittings that we go through, it all has to translate to performance on the golf course, because otherwise, like, what's the point? If you hit very well on the range, I mean, that doesn't matter. It's what you do on the golf course. And so our hypothesis was one of the probably the most important piece of data is what's happening on the golf course. And in fact, PGA Tour collects that through ShotLink with 300 volunteers a day. And we're like, how can we bring that to the amateur golfer, the average golfer out there that doesn't have like 300 volunteers watching them play on the golf course? And that's how we started. And obviously, along with the evolution of Arcos happened, like there was evolution of sensors going on in parallel, evolution of cell phones going on in parallel, evolution of data and machine learning technologies, evolution of strokes gained as Mark Brody and these guys were moving it forward. So all those trends, I think, helped us realize what the direction that we're going in, and wouldn't be possible without all of that, like the Moore's Law and everything else happening around it. And so today, our vision is, we're going to put a sensor in every club out there. I think like when you look at historically, say the past 500 years of golf club has been a grip, a shaft, and a head. And our goal is it should always be a sensor, grip, shaft, and head, so you can keep tracking what's actually happening, the utilization of it. And then off that connected club are going to come streams of data that we are then generating insights upon. So that you as a golfer, you as a fitter, you as an instructor, or you, or the golf industry at large, whether it's the course superintendent or the club manufacturers, the R&D engineers, everybody's going to make smarter decisions that tie in to the base need, which is to help the golfer perform better. And when the golfer performs better, the golfer is going to have more fun. And in the end, we all golf for fun. That's, I would say, like reading, like, and that's been true whether you read Harry Colt or like any of the books, or McKenzie, C.B. McDonald, it all ties into, and then nowadays too, many of the new writers, it ties, like the reason we're investing all this time into golf is the pleasure that we're going to derive from it. And just like TXG, our mission is through data, make that enhance that pleasure. So it's maximized.
And the thing with that is, Sal, and you back this up, is that kind of the overall outcome to have more fun, enjoy the game more, that might mean different things to different people.
Absolutely.
Right. So, and I'll hear Andrew Rice and Scott Fawcett go at each other with regards to this. And Scott will drive his point home that it's about the score, Andrew. So all about the low number, lower that number. And Andrew goes, well, not for me. It's not, you know, I want to stand up there and hit the shots I want to hit. And, you know, and the enjoyment for me is not purely based on the score. I can enjoy a game where I shoot 75, where I'm hitting the ball nicely and having a great round, a little bit more than a 71 that feels like I'm not hitting it very well and it's a bit of a grind.
True.
And Scott can't get his head around that you know, it's got to be driven by the score. Yeah. But everyone has their own opinion as to what they need to extract from the game.
That's actually really well said. So many times I've played golf with friends of mine or just strangers at the club, fellow members, and they've walked off the course, they've shot higher than they wanted, and they've gone, let's say, straight to the range.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I've watched them for the 18 holes and gone, you didn't get up and down once.
Yeah.
You missed a bunch of three footers. And so in my brain, I'm going, you know, if you want to shoot a lower score, you just need to chip and putt better.
Right.
But in their mind, you're right. Their takeaway is, I didn't score well. And they associate it with hitting the ball well. And that's
great.
You've said this to me before. It's interesting feedback because it is countering the data a bit, but it's the enjoyment part that you're talking about. They want to see the ball fly a certain way. That's their enjoyment.
Yeah.
But in the end, they can make that decision if they have the data. They can't make that decision if they don't know the actual kind of breakdown of how they're
doing. And the data might show them in like certain cases, like, you know, you literally had the best approach round of your life. Mm-hmm. And that's like, while you might not have had the best score, you had the best approach round, you're like best of few putts. And that's why your score was higher. The other piece I think that happens is there's like an emotional, golf's so emotional. It's so personal. It's your game. It's an expression of what's happening in your life, maybe mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually at that time. And it like outputs in the swing and like in the end in the score. And then it's very hard for you to assess, like if you don't have a good day or if you hit a few bad shots or if you didn't get those up and downs, why did they happen? And it really is, I mean, like 4 hours of rounds, and like the way our brain works is we remember kind of the extreme events, the really great ones and the really bad ones. Just like, if we have an average conversation today, you probably won't remember in 2 weeks what I said. So the brain remembers like those extreme moments, and that influences people to make emotional decisions in terms of what to work on or what club might not be right, as opposed to data-driven decisions. And I think that's where we come in to help you maybe take a more rational approach to things, which will in the end lead to, I would say, more pleasure out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And I want to come on. I want to share a little story, which I don't think, you know, on the chats that we've had, I've ever shared with you. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But what I want to just start with, Sal, is the kind of why should someone use Arcos Golf, right? From what you guys know now, why should the people who are on the fence and maybe go, okay, this is THG's introduction, because we've wanted to do this for a while, introduce Arcos Golf and the fact that we are such proponents of the technology, but we didn't feel that we could do this subject title justice by us introducing it. It had to be you guys to do it.
Sure. Yeah, I will do it. I think it starts with, are you looking to get more out of your golf game, the time investment that you're making? And then, I mean, in the end, everything in life is about trade-offs, right? And so when we're deciding as golfers that we're going to spend time golfing, we're looking for reward back from the game. Are you looking to increase that reward back from the game? Then you need Arcos. And how does that increase? I mean, it increases through awareness. Like, to get more out of golf, you got to be more aware. Some of the basic things that golfers are not aware of are how far do their clubs actually go. I'll start with really basic stuff. And there's a cognitive bias. We all think our drives go longer than they do. We all think our irons go longer than they do. And every time we come back, like, we're more, like, we're generally upset, like, we didn't play to our potential. So I think that realization of what is our potential, where are we today, and how far do our clubs go is really important. There's a cognitive bias. We help eliminate that bias. And that, by the way, that cognitive bias exists among successful people, which golfers generally are, throughout society. Like, there's been studies done at Yale where they asked students, like in my class, they asked, like, are you above or below average compared to the rest of your classmates? And 95% of students said they're above average. So that's mathematically not possible. Similarly, at driver's license institutes, they ask, like, are you above or below average driver? 87 to 93% of people say they're above average drivers compared to the rest of the people out there. And that's the cognitive bias. Similarly, golfers think they hit longer than they do. But when you're presented with hard numbers, you end up making smarter decisions. In fact, that's why our average user, like an average Arcos user, is 5.5 times more likely to get a hole-in-one compared to an average golfer out there, because they're just picking a better club. So they're giving themselves a better chance to get pin high. And so I'd start with that as a number one basic reason. Then beyond that, if you're the golfer who wants to improve, wants to win those matches, like, I mean, golf isn't ever, I would say, like, maybe like a forever challenge. Nobody's perfected it, nobody will. But we all play it because we want to get more out of it. We want to get better at it. And that betterment might be facets of the game or your overall score. But to do that, you need to understand what your strengths and weaknesses are. And the best way to do that is through strokes gained. To understand where are you actually losing your strokes on the course, so that next time you have, let's say, 20, 30 minutes before a round, I mean, right now, most people will kind of just go take their driver, take their five iron, take their putter, and then kind of equally spend that time, or maybe just hit drives and putt, whatever your habits are you're doing. Instead, those 30 minutes, if through your on-course data you were made aware, you know, like, you're losing 2.5 shots a round from 100 to 150 yard approach shots. So take your 9-iron, 8-iron, 7-iron, just warm up with that. And by the way, putting, you're losing most of your strokes from 10 to 25 feet. So just go practice that and hit drills for that. That 30 minutes of warm-up turns into 30 minutes of targeted improvement on the weakest parts of your game, which are the parts that you can improve the fastest. And they'll see you have remarkable, I would say, have an inordinate amount of impact on your game. And if I can keep going for maybe a minute longer. So those are like two simple things. But if you're the person who's getting fit for clubs and who's taking lessons, how do you know what lesson you're going to take? It shouldn't be based on your feelings. It should be based on where are you actually losing strokes, so that the instructor is equipped on the right things to share with you, or right parts of your game to work on. Is it actually driving distance that you're losing strokes? If it is, very good. Work on it. Or maybe it's driving accuracy. Maybe it's decision-making on the drive, where you're putting driver into play and getting too many misses because of penalties or bringing hazards into play. Or maybe it's chip shots from 25 to 50 yards. Like, whatever it is, you need to be aware so you can target your instructor can target lessons based on those weaknesses. And then similarly, I would say from a fitting perspective, and I know we haven't really shared much of this publicly, but you need to know how your clubs are performing on the course, not just from a distance perspective, but also from a strokes gain or scoring perspective. I know, like, I had, I mean, so this is some of the stuff we're working on that we'll share more details in the future. But for me personally, I looked at my strokes gain data by club, and I saw my 6-iron and my 50 degree. Every time I pull it out of the bag, I'm losing 0.2 to 0.3 strokes when I'm taking those shots. And I took the clubs to a local fitter, and we don't have a TXU over here in Connecticut. So turns out the lie angles on both those clubs were wrong. And that was like eye-opening to me, literally those two clubs, and they were everybody that did the full bag check, and it was just the 6-iron 50 degree, and those were my clubs I was losing most on. And I got that fixed, and for the first time ever, I ended up winning our medal play championship which at my club, which I mean, I attribute to just that level of awareness and also to a lesson from Bob Ford. I was struggling from 100 to 150 yards in my approach shots, and he literally gave me a half hour lesson at Oakmont 2 days before their metal play championship. And it was like, it's like amazing that power data, just those things can really change like outcomes. I mean, it's surprising. I personally experienced that was really interesting and really fun.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you guys tell a pretty cool story with John K. Solheim as well, and kind of obviously resources that he has at his disposal. I mean, he doesn't want for anything in terms of a head or a shaft or a grip. There's nothing that he can't have access to. His guys can make him whatever he needs. But his experience from using Arcos completely transformed his game.
Absolutely. I mean, for 15 years, he was an 8 handicap. And this is a story he's shared. Now he's a scratch golfer in the last year. And he actually got refit based on his Arcos on-course missed tendencies. And he realized, you know, you're not the same golfer. I mean, you never hit 7 or 10 7 irons on the golf course. You hit a 7 iron, then you hit a driver or a putt, and you go back to driver. So there has to be a combination. You need to understand what's happening on the course to get fit properly. And so he got refit based on his on-course data. He also realized he knew his chipping was bad. He didn't know how bad. And that
sounds familiar.
Lessons. Yeah. That motivated. He was like, you know, he realized, you know, I'm a scratch driver. I mean, basically, I'm not losing any strokes on driving, not losing any strokes, gaining strokes on approach. And boy, when I miss, I just like literally double bogey. If I miss the green, it's a double bogey because that's how bad his approach game or his short game was. And he got lessons on that. And now he's a scratch golfer. I mean, I think there's also a psychological component to this awareness. It increases that golf's challenge. Like now, you know, I mean, I'd say if you're sitting, you've been kind of at like a 6 handicap or whatever, like scratch golf, whatever, same level, golf might look like a black box. You don't know what you need to do to get better. But all of a sudden, once you start seeing your game broken down into yardages and facets and all this stuff, then you start realizing, oh my God, I can actually focus on this. I can do it. I'm really good here, not so good here. It's motivating. Or I can be this good over here. And so I think that motivational aspect is also fascinating of data.
It really, really is. And speaking to that motivational aspect, on the 15th of May this year, I posted on my Instagram a picture that showed my handicap breakdown by sort of facets. So I was a +4 driving. I was a +4.7 putting. My chipping, I was a 30 handicapper. So my goal has always been to try and get down to...
He's laughing.
I know. I mean, it's ridiculous. And
mine was basically...
That's very John Cage.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And honestly, my biggest internal conflict was I always felt like I was a terrible driver of the golf ball.
That is interesting.
And a very average putter.
Yep.
Yet when I had data to show, get off the driving range, get to the short game area,
yes,
my goal had always been to be a plus something handicap golfer. Now I no longer play professional. And I was probably a 1 or 2 handicapper ever since I started tracking a handicap. My goal was always to get to a +2. And I remember saying that. I remember one of my partners here at TSG laughed when I said I wanted to be a +2. He's like, well, you don't have enough time to be a +2.
Okay.
So he doubted it basically. He's like, well, that, you know, to achieve that, you have to practice more and you have to really invest in your game. Well, the reality was all it took was knowing the areas I really had to focus in. Mm-hmm. And I never played more golf this year. And I stand now as a +2.5. And every single aspect of my game is around scratch or better. The driving and putting isn't quite as good as it was on that early metric, but everything is pretty much around scratch or +2 or +3.
Interesting stuff.
And really that for me led me on a journey with Aaron Dill at Titleist into building a set of short game tools,
yep,
that would help me with this part I was really struggling. So he and I had several consultations with regards to bounce on my wedges, the shafts, you know, what job are we looking for the 50 to do? Okay, let's shape it slightly differently. Okay, let's look at the sand wedge, the lob wedge. And it took me down this journey that got me the absolute best short game tools that I could use.
And then in combination with you focusing, you may be in put extra practice time in, but you just refocus the time that you had available. So I think you distributing not just your practice attention, but your fitting attention. Because I've spent lots of time with you, and I know for a fact your driver gets a lot of your attention. Because as you said, your perception was, I'm not good driver of the ball. And now that you're presented with the data that said, no, you actually are extreme. You're better than, I don't know, 99.9%
of the ball.
Yeah, like no one drives at plus 4.1. Then you said, okay, well, these are the things that need assessment. And then you went at it from several different directions, which I think is why you ended up with such a big improvement.
Yeah, 100%.
But the data is the beginning of that. And that's why I think the conversation is interesting to me, because it all starts with that first. You're presented with the facts. If you aren't presented with the facts, you just go down the wrong road. You just make the wrong decisions, or you make uninformed decisions versus what you did. Let you, albeit with the best resources possible, but doesn't matter. It, relatively, with whatever resources or practice time you have, you can make a better improvement than without it.
No question.
Yeah, it's just optimal use of the time that you have, which will maximize like your performance and what you get out of the game. It's totally true. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I got down to a plus 2.1 this year. That's the first time ever I'd gone to
plus. That's good.
Amazing.
And that was basically what I would do. So other than like the lesson that I got from Bob Ford and the two readjustments, I would like, so in Arcos, we show you like, these are your top three improvement priorities. So top three things to focus on. And that I didn't have time for practice, because I'm like every chance I get, I'll play around. But I have like 20, 30 minutes before a round where I can warm up. And I literally just, my warm-up regimen was whatever is the weakest top three things. That's the only thing I'm going to work on before the round. I'm going to take those clubs. If it's driving distance, I'd look up a video or something and try to apply that and see if it's working for me on the range. But in general, that's all I did. And it's fascinating, like the level of improvement you can see by focusing on your weaknesses. It really is.
And this is going to lead us into such an interesting, or such interesting information with regards to golf equipment. Because I remember you had texted me earlier in the summer, or messaged me and asked me about your sand wedge. And we were chatting about the longevity of your sand wedge. And as time went on, the results got worse. And you know, whether that's, and that's what Titleist says, doesn't it? You know, the amount of rounds you use your wedges for, the spin will drop off, the performance will become more inconsistent, and that will lead to such interesting information for people that, your short game isn't as good, your wedges are 3 years old.
So true, and that inspired the video that we did on it.
That's right.
It was eye-opening to me too.
Yeah.
Like, crazy, I didn't know anything about that, and I asked you guys, and you did the study, and I agree. Like, Titleist also put a video on their website. I actually asked John Kay and our partners at Cobra as well. I was like, listen, here's what I'm seeing. Like, does this jive? And sure enough, I play about 50 to 70 rounds a year. And so, the wedges start degrading. I think Titleist said like 70 rounds is kind of like the max that you want it. And I was seeing that in my proximity to the hole data. Where it was like, it was good, consistent, and then boom, like proximity to hole starts getting worse and worse and worse. And I was like, is my game getting worse, or it doesn't feel like it? And sure. And before I started addressing like technical issues, I knew like I should check whether it's an equipment issue or not. And after your video, I changed my clubs and my chipping's been like not an issue. But it was fascinating. Thank you for doing that video and saving me.
It was a good idea.
Thank you for the idea. Yeah, no, it was great.
It's half the battle is the idea usually.
Yeah. So true. So let's touch on obviously all the. Are we talking hundreds of millions of data shots collected now? Where are we at?
Last I checked, which was I would say in June, we had like 300 million shots recorded. Maybe like, so now it might be 400 million.
Yeah, the largest data set by a long way.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's one of the largest naturally. I would say like amateur sports data set might be the largest in the world, performance data set. And I don't know what all we're going to find in it, but I do know there's going to be a wealth of information, and we're just touching kind of the surface of what's possible. And the key really is like Arcos's job is to mine this data in a way where it's actionable and easy to understand for all of our users, whether it's like the golfers or the fitters or the instructors or anybody else who's like helping golfers play better.
I can't tell you how good that for me sounds when someone says, I can't tell you what we're going to find.
It's a good
because
sign.
It just tells me there's so much more to come from an already incredible resource. I remember talking to the guys at Fujikura in 2011 when I saw them testing the Enzo motion capture system. And I was sitting behind two technicians who were basically watching the code come in from basically every single swing. And they had some long drive guys testing it. And you know, this $250,000 system basically measuring everything pre, at, and post impact. And I was going, what does all this mean? What's it telling you? And they're like, we actually don't know yet.
Really?
Everything that it's telling
us. Yeah, yeah.
And I just, that's just so good. It's good to hear because it gives us so much to learn.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I mean, there's like, there's the like static view of it. There's also, I mean, we got to overlay patterns like aging. I mean, that's a real thing. As you get older, how do we factor that into improvement advice? How does seasonality play into club selection? Like, should I have a different winter driver, a different ball? Like, how do we pick golf balls? I mean, I can go on. It's like there's so much information. Should I be walking or should I be on a cart, like in performance stuff? Like we have all of this information. I think like it's going to be really, really fascinating, the kinds of insights that come. Do I play better in the afternoons? And why is that? Is it because my body is looser? Who knows? But like it'll be really, really fascinating. I think also that in the future, health data is going to be tied into all of the Arcos data, so you're going to get even more interesting insights, whether it's Whoop data or Apple Watch data or something.
You might definitely integrate with that. Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's like first inning of what's going to be possible. But I'll maintain like the key is for us to really digest, analyze, and simplify so they're actionable and impactful insights. Otherwise, it'll be a data deluge where people are like eyes glazed over, and we're going to never let that happen.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Part of your job is to make sure that it's digestible for the average person on the app. I think the app is good in that sense. Like the things that you can take action on right away are the handicap summary that you just showed me.
Yeah.
The yardages, like the smart caddy yardages. In terms of implementing this into your game, you play, I don't know, a few rounds of golf and you've already got kind of a practice plan and an on-course strategy just given to you by an app.
I would say there's like on-course component to the app as well. About half our users utilize it, which is basically giving you GPS distances to front, middle, back of the green. You can set the flag, and then it takes into account elevation, altitude, temperature, wind, gusts, humidity to adjust for all of that and give you what, like, the PGA Tour caddy would actually probably smart better than PGA Tour caddy.
It's probably better.
Like Bubba Watson's caddy. He's like, I actually use Arcos caddy before the rounds to figure all of this out. So
why not?
Yeah, it's so cool. And we've talked about that in our on-course stuff.
We used it a ton.
Yeah, I mean, my first reference point is my Arcos data.
Yep.
And then I'll have someone else shoot the number, but I'm using that to factor in everything, all the variables. You know, the gun, the Bushnell is shooting one variable, and this is all the variables.
And I've heard people go, well, I don't want to rely on the app to tell me how to play in the wind or play in the cold. But I say to them, if you have no idea, if you have no reference points, if you have no experience with the correct decision, how are you supposed to like develop this knowledge base? You know what I mean? If you have no idea what to do from that yardage, chances are you're not just going to figure it out like that. I mean, I've used it to learn how to play better in the wind because now I understand more what happens when I hit a ball into the wind and how much wind that is and how much cold that is. So I think it's as much of like a learning, on-course learning tool as it would be for, you know, the stats. Like the stats part of it is really kind of the secondary piece.
Yeah, and I would say like I was just having a very interesting conversation with the CTO of Teradata, which is they're one of the pioneers of big data. And he shared, you know, like computers, machine learning, AI has gotten really good at recognizing cancer through like X-ray images and stuff. So computer, like doctors get it right 95% of the time. The AI gets it right 97% of the time. But when they combine AI and doctors, it's like 99.7 or some crazy high number there. And so that's how I think about like what Arcos is doing. Like on the on-course side, we're giving you this information on the AI side. You're the human And when you combine the human intelligence with the artificial intelligence, that's when you will make the smartest decisions. So we're not eliminating the human. We're not saying that this is the end all be all. We're saying we're giving you information so you'll make a smart decision every single time.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, it's amazing. An
enhancement, right, to your ability. It's really cool.
And that kind of touches on just one of the things I did want to ask today, Sal, not to go too deep into a rabbit hole with this one, but where are we right now in this technology age? Where do we sit? What are the things that are available to us? What are you seeing in the field that could be integrated into the way we, you know, deliver our experience at something like a TXG or on the golf course as a player?
Yeah, I think like you're asking specific to golf, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, from a TXG standpoint, one of the things that me as a golf, I'll speak of me as a user and a golfer, would really like is certainly, which is something you guys are already doing, is an integration of my on-course data with my launch monitor data. So you make a decision. So like, I'll give you an example. I wanted to go and get my specs. And it turned out, like, in for whatever reason, in the hitting bay, everything was going left. But my misses are right. I know that based on my data, on my pro shots, like, I miss twice more often to the right than the left. But in the hitting bay, everything was left. So I think that integration of on course and hitting bay data, I think, like, for the fitters to have that view of my game coming in, having that notion of, like, this is a data-driven thing, that's important. Second would be, it'd be awesome if you guys could keep tabs on my performance around clubs and ping me. Like, hey, we think your wedges, like there's some deterioration we're noticing. Why don't you, like, I think it might be time to get new wedges because of this, that, like you're losing like half a stroke around because of that, or maybe it's whatever it might be. There's predictive stuff that's showing, by the way, like, yeah, we know you got a new driver 18 months ago, but there's now measurable, like we can literally save you like 0.4 strokes, and if it's worth it for you, come in and get fit. So I think like maybe a more real-time engine from a fitter where there's on course, not just like it's based on, you have my launch monitor, you have my overall spin rates and things like that. So we're starting at like non-zero ground, but like there's an ongoing interaction based on my on-course data that helps me understand. Because as a golfer, you always have a question about, is my equipment optimized or not? And I think if that can be satisfied in an ongoing basis, like it's fine now. No, now it's time to come in. Or we start noticing your six irons now, like you're losing too many shots off your six iron. Let's just come in and check that out. I think that would be a pretty awesome thing to happen for golfers long-term from a fitting perspective.
One question I had was, with all the data you have, is there plans to have sort of the AI version of what you're talking about? And I'll give you an example. So with YouTube analytics, they're very basic compared to how many data points you have. But it will leave us a message purely by AI going, well, this month the videos you produced were more engaging. People actually watched a little bit less of them, but your topics were quite good this month. And it'll say stuff like, you know, consider topics in that range again, but maybe consider whatever, making them a little bit shorter, more engaging. Is there a way that you guys with your AI can go, it's recognizing patterns and going, we notice your driver performance is a little kind of funky right now. Can you assess whether that's a real pattern or not, kind of thing?
Yeah. And so I think 100%, and that's the direction that we're headed in. And then you come to that like combination of human and AI intelligence. So like, I don't think we can solve it ourselves, but we can point to the fitter. Here's a user who's having these issues. And then we push it to you, like then you solve it, but you're now made aware. Then you have the tools to not just like, I would say like we've made the end golfer aware, we've made the fitter aware. And then it's the relationship becomes stronger as a result, I think.
I think that's honestly exactly kind of what I picture being the perfect solution.
For sure. And there is that pattern recognition towards some things that are happening. So the data can show that there are trends with yardages, misses, things like that. And if you look at the pattern recognition, you know, there are, you know, some automated suggestions, is it probably is that you're doing this. Yes. It probably is that you're doing that. And that may go, okay, you need a fit, or you may need a lesson. That yeah, looks like it yeah. may be a function of a delivery.
In fact, long-term, what can be done is as we apprise fitters, like, hey, here's an issue. If we also then start recording, what was it that you did? You changed the shaft, you changed, they got him a new club. Then there can be machine learning algorithms built on top that can actually predict, like, what are the what should happen, when did good outcomes happen when these changes happen, and that will make fitting, I would say, even smarter as a result, because you'll probably get a more consistent outcome, probably more consistent input from the fitter as a result.
Wow. 100%.
This, to me, sounds like this is the future of fitting. That's what I'm hearing right now.
And honestly, that to me was when I sat in a kind of brainstorming session about, it would have been about probably 2 years ago, and sat and said, what's the next thing that TXG really has to try and adopt? It was a more connected relationship with our customers and clients, making sure that we, beyond the fit, we're able to sort of help them with their game, be preemptive to their problems, where we could potentially suggest, coming in for a refit before they even really knew that there was a problem. And you guys are truly the solution for that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think you nailed it.
We're a solution in conjunction with the fitter, without.
Well, you're an enabling technology, I guess, would be the way to describe it. Mm-hmm. Like, the fitter can do a great job and the technology can do a great job, but together they can do like the amazing job that we're all looking for.
Yeah. And I think like the combinations of shafts and heads and all that stuff, like, it's literally a perfect, because you can't have a golfer try all those things. They also, not only are they in a hitting bay and in a simulated environment, they also get tired and they don't have the time. And so like that's a really interesting, I would say, a perfect data science problem to narrow down what are the perfect shafts for this profile of golfer that you can then try. And then certainly there's a feel, I would say there's a personal preference and on top of performance that comes in, which is, I think, where that can probably, at least today, can be automated.
Yeah, I think there's so many phenomenal tests to be done on things like a golfer who walks out the bay with an optimized driver relative to how far it can go, versus a golfer that walks out the bay with a driver that's optimized for functionality, functionally playing the game better. And that's I think,
yes,
would be a great experiment for people to walk out and go, okay, don't go in there chasing maximum distance numbers from your fit, because that's not ultimately going to lead to a better score. It's not going to improve you solely on a strokes gain. Distance, sure, you know, obviously does have an impact on strokes gain, but it's not the only thing that has an impact.
No, I was saying, in fact, like if you end up hitting, say, one or two recovery shots around, you're losing a lot, even if you've gained on distance, like 5-10 yards of distance, and it adds like one recovery shot or two recovery shots around, it's like more than offsetting like the gains you might have made from a strokes gained distance standpoint. So I think, like, I mean, yeah, it's an interesting thing that you're talking about, which is optimizing on distance versus optimizing on strokes gained.
Yeah. And I think that you may remember back to this, before we really had our relationship with Arcos, I remember having a conversation with our guys and saying, I would love the day to come where we could say to someone at the end of their fit, you haven't gained 15 yards. You have improved your session. It has improved your strokes gained potential,
yes,
by 2.5 strokes or
whatever it is.
Based on the distance gain, the accuracy gain, you're no longer hitting these. So if we create boundaries around the shot, your potential strokes gained is X, because that's so much more impactful than 15 yards. What does 15 yards mean? Well, to different people, it means different things.
It does mean different things. And you're right. We were talking about in the context of launch monitor and simulator software. Is there a way that simulator software, using their data, can compile a day of, albeit it will be day of, strokes gained factor, where they only gained 2 yards, but the accuracy factor was worth 2.5 shots, or it's worth one extra shot. And the distance may honestly may be worth zero because if you gain 6 yards, it's half a club on your irons. You may not gain any shots.
Yeah.
But as Sal, you said, one recovery shot is a full stroke wasted.
Yeah.
It's all it takes, right? So if you removed two of those around, you know, that's hugely significant. So that's I think the future of it would be, if we can have it in the bay also would be great, but at least now we have it outdoors with Arcos. They can show you what their strokes gained is, and then you can, you know, we can estimate that for now. But it would be great if that was just a concrete thing to show people.
Yeah. And I also think it would be a major breakthrough from a customer experience standpoint that you're not going to then go to see a fitter who's going to lead you towards thinking that it's just a distance game, you know, and with regards to your iron fitting or that type of thing, just chasing that one dimensional view of improvement. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can look at strokes gained as the metric versus, you know, some other metric, then I think that's more impactful.
It is the metric, it seems like, isn't it? Like, I'm sure, Sal, you've gone to that point yourself. It is the metric that everyone cares about.
I mean, yeah, it's the only way to really understand where you're losing strokes. If you want to gain strokes, you got to understand where you're losing strokes, and strokes gain is the way to do it. And in fact, like, I mean, I think, like, sometimes the conversation even around Bryson can be a little bit misleading, where certainly he's hitting long. He's one of the longest hitters on tour, no doubt, but he's also one of the most accurate. He wouldn't be where he is if he were just long. You need that accuracy. So, like, there is, I mean, it's not that there should be distance gains at all costs. Like, there is a cost to it. And that's why Bryson's not at a 48-inch shaft right now, because the accuracy loss is too much. And he's trying to figure that out. He said it himself. But it's not all about distance. And it really never was and never will be. There is an accuracy component to it. Even, like, in the U.S. Open, he was, I mean, people are complaining that nobody should win the U.S. Open when they hit so few fairways, because I think he hit, like, 41% of fairways. And the reality is he was tied 26th in fairways hit. So the fairways were just harder to hit. But from a strokes gained driving perspective, he was above average on accuracy and above average, well above average on distance, but he wasn't losing a ton of strokes on accuracy. So it's not just all about distance.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Very, very cool. Sal, what would you say to this point? What are some of the most impactful learnings that you guys have had at Arcos and that people can implement into their own games so far?
I think one of probably the most impactful one was the cognitive bias around distances. And it, like, really is wider. The higher your handicap, the less the awareness, and the larger the gap. And we can see that in club selection. So we've done some studies, like, how far does your club go, and when are you picking that club for how much distance is left? And so that gap of, like, reality to perception is wider among golfers. So, I mean, I hate to make generalizations around data in general, because, I mean, everybody's so different, but I can say, like, there is a overriding cognitive bias among golfers. So try club up, like, half a club.
It's funny, like, everyone's heard that, but the data really does say that.
And it's like, it's hard to convince yourself to do it till you see the data. That's the thing. That's how humans work. And then other than that, I mean, I think there is no one weakness for any golfer. Like, it's every golfer is different. And so what we've seen is we've tried to find, like, generalizations, like, if you're this handicapped, then this happened. There is literally none. That's depends.
So, wow, that is good to hear.
Like, it's like, some people have, it's not like everybody's like, some people are weak at driving. Some people are weak at putting. Some people are, what we don't know is one study I want to know is, what do you think your weakness is and what's your actual weakness? That's something we haven't done around perception and reality. I know for me, I thought putting was my weakness. And I was playing a lot of golf at the Yale Golf Course, which has huge greens. And when we first rolled out Arcos, turns out approach game was my weakness. I was leaving myself 40, 50, 60 foot putts. And from, I think it's 50 feet, PGA Tour players three putt like 18% of the time. I believe that number is correct. And so I was spending all this, turns out my putting was actually great. And I was spending all this time wasting away on that incremental, like, point one shot improvement that I could get versus practicing an approach where I could get 1, 2, 3, 4 shots improvement. So I wonder how many people are actually aware. I would say fewer people are aware of their weaknesses fewer people think correctly than incorrectly about their weaknesses.
Very interesting.
That was fascinating, isn't it?
Really,
it?
I mean, you could keep going.
Yeah. No. I mean, that is the reality, isn't it? You could keep just digging forever. Deeper and deeper and deeper.
And you will.
I know. Well, I mean, Sal, this has been such a great introduction, and obviously, anyone who's confused about the value of Arcos at this point is just that, they are confused.
Yes, it's a lack of awareness, which is why this podcast was so good.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome session.
Well, we appreciate everything you're doing, the role you're playing. I know you do so much with regards to things like this on podcasts and Q&As and joining, speaking seminars like Andrew's Coaches Camp and things like that. Just trying to kind of, help people and educate them with regards to how they can improve their game. Ultimately, is what it is.
And it is that, because the reality is this does Arcos, I think, is the best system that we've come across. But what you're advocating does transcend your actual product. I mean, the reality is you're advocating people just be aware of what they're actually doing.
Absolutely.
If that's with you guys, we think that's the best option. But I think the message is still, it goes beyond that to some degree.
That's absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. And
thanks for doing this.
Fun chatting with you guys.
Awesome. You too, Sal. You too. All right, buddy. We'll catch you down the road.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks again. Thank you.